Joining me on the line is Emily Good, who gained national recognition a few weeks ago when she was arrested on her own lawn for filming a policeman conducting a traffic stop. Emily, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Emily, let's start from the beginning. Now, I saw the video, as did millions of people around the world, of you being arrested simply for filming from, I guess, a camcorder, right?
Yeah, it was my iPod.
Why don't you start from the beginning of this incident for our listeners?
Sure. I was at home. It was evening, about 9:45, and I had a friend visiting, and we saw flashing lights coming in through the windows and looked outside. There were two police cars blocking the road, lights flashing, and they were talking to a man in a car, and they seemed to be fairly aggressive. So we decided to go outside to witness, be a little closer, see what was going on. And as we were heading out, my friend said, "Do you have a camera?" I ran back and got my iPod, and we stepped outside very quietly onto the front porch, didn't turn on the light, and I started filming when I was a good ways down the lawn, kind of right next to the sidewalk. So then the video starts. Just to sort of emphasize, I didn't say anything. We didn't make our presence very clearly felt. We simply stood there quietly observing the police when the film starts. And then at that point, the police officer, within maybe first minute, he sees us there and says, "Can I help you?" I say, "No, thanks. I'm just videoing." And then within 3 minutes, I'm arrested.
They don't waste any time, huh? Now, of course, as I said earlier, I saw the video, as did millions of others. But in the video, you sounded a little bit surprised that he was actually carrying through with his threats. What did you expect that he would do? Let me ask you this. If he said, "Can you do me a favor and not film," would you have listened to him?
I don't think so. I felt like I was clearly within my rights to film him. You know, I would have respected an order to step back if he felt like I was too close. I really didn't know exactly what the right distance was to start out at, but I didn't feel like I was too close. He never told me to move back. At one point, he does say, "You know, you're not even moving back." And I say, "Do you want me to move back?" But, you know, at no point did he give me any order other than to go in, and that was something I was unwilling to do. If he had asked me to stop filming, you know, I can't say what I would have done. I might have stopped filming and continued to witness, because there were several witnesses, myself and my friend and a neighbor. My intention wasn't to make this a worldwide news story. It was simply to witness the event and to make sure that the person that they were handcuffing and searching was treated in a humane way.
In fact, it did become a worldwide event. Now, there is a history of police in your city doing things not the right way. Is that right?
Yeah, right now there's a couple of investigations. There's lots of complaints. Right now there's a city councilman who is the public safety chair. He's the person sort of in charge of police community relations, who says in a letter that he put out this week, first line, "Dear Mayor, Police Chief, and City Council President, the city of Rochester has lost control of its police force." And then he goes on to say, from the first day in office, almost 8 years ago, he's heard an overwhelming number of complaints, and the majority of those complaints were made by people of color, and overwhelmingly, the complaints have been ignored. So we have a lot of issues in our police department that go much, much further than the past 8 years, but specifically relating to people of color and relationships with the community, because the vast majority of our police officers are white and they do not live in the city. And the way that they treat people who are not white and who do live in the city is horrendous. By and large, there are definitely exceptions, but I would say that that's the dominant way that things go.
Right. And I was thinking that if this particular officer would have come up to you in a nice tone and just said, "Hey, could you do me a favor? Would you mind turning that off?" There is a possibility that you might have ceased filming.
You know, I might have. I don't quite understand why he would have a problem with filming, because if he's not doing anything wrong, then the film isn't really that exciting, you know. But, you know, maybe he could have said nicely, "Oh, you know, if he had some specific issue, I probably would have listened. I was definitely interested in hearing what he had to say, if it was a reasonable and lawful order."
Right. So a few minutes go by, you're arrested. What do they do? Do they throw you on the ground, jump on your back?
No, they didn't brutalize me. I did pass camera off in a pretty smooth move, right as he was handcuffing me, to my friend Ryan, who immediately sort of retreated, went up the stairs to the porch. So he held the camera. They knew that they were being taped, and they just walked me to the police car, put me in the back of the police car, and called another officer to the scene. And then the four officers took me around the corner to a school parking lot lot where another three officers joined them. And for the next almost hour, those seven police officers wrote the police report. And then they called a paddy wagon and they loaded me up in there, which made another stop to pick up some other people. And then we went to jail. So it was a long process. My friends and my father beat me to jail because they all knew that's where I was heading.
Sounds like a great use of taxpayer dollars. Seven really? Officers taking an hour to fill out a report. And of course, we've all seen them on the side of the road. And you wonder, what are they doing for that long? Hey, it's not an easy job, but it seems like a lot of them make the job much more difficult than it has to be.
Yeah.
For whatever reason or reasons. So the paddy wagon took you to jail, right?
Yeah.
Had you ever been in a paddy wagon before?
I had. In March, I did an act of civil disobedience with a number of friends, and seven of us were arrested at an eviction defense criminal trespass action. We were trying to defend the home of a grandmother in my neighborhood who was being evicted after Fannie Mae had received part of the bailout money. They refused to negotiate with her after her husband died. You know, it was a pretty legitimate story for defending her home and then trying to keep the bank from taking her house.
Mm-hmm. So you're an activist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I've been to jail a few times, but that was the first time it was not an act of intentional sort of civil disobedience risk, at least.
I guess everyone who's listening to this would think that they would be safe on their own lawn, right?
Right. Yeah, I did think that the police officer was bluffing when he said, "I'm going to arrest you." I thought he clearly wasn't happy with what I was doing, but I didn't think he would follow through with that threat.
I guess that's why the video did go viral and so many people are interested in it.
Yeah.
You're in the paddy wagon. How was the ride to jail? Anything significant?
Well, you know, the two other people who they picked up were also just stunned and confused because they had not done anything to be arrested. And I don't know their whole story. We did chat a little bit through the wall because the other two were men, so they separate us. And then we chatted a little bit more when we were waiting on the bench in the jail for our pictures and everything. And they truly, it was a father and son, and they said, "We didn't do anything." And to corroborate that story, their charges were dismissed the following morning at arraignment, which almost never happens. I mean, even if you have a pretty bogus charge, it usually sticks around till at least one or two court dates.
Mm-hmm.
Later, when someone who's a legal representative can say, "Hey, this doesn't amount to a real charge." But, you know, they seem to have been telling the truth in that it was such a bogus arrest that they were dismissed at arraignment. They just walked away the next morning, completely baffled. So I was in a complete state of shock, and I felt really outraged, and like this whole situation was so full of injustice. It made me just sad. It made me angry.
Well, you probably felt violated.
Completely.
On a lot of levels.
Yeah.
People just scooping you up. And so you get to jail. Have you ever been in that jail before?
Yes. This is the same jail I've been to a number of times.
So you're kind of comfortable there.
I mean, I wasn't comfortable. They did not put me in a cell because I had my family and friends waiting for me before I even got there. They knew that I was going to be bailed out. So they just had me hang around for a little while and process whatever information they needed to process. And then I was released.
Were you in pajamas? It looked like you were from the video.
Yes, I had bare feet, no shoes on for my entire jail experience, which felt pretty gross. And I had just pajamas. I had really thin cotton pants and a t-shirt.
What was the date that it happened?
May 12th.
You get into jail. They don't put you in a cell because your family and friends are waiting there to bail you out. So in other words, they wanted money to get you out of jail. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty typical. So this is what keeps people in the system. The bail system keeps people's money tied up. Typically, people without a lot of money, you know, if you have got $500 tied up on a completely false misdemeanor, that's a pretty serious inconvenience.
Absolutely. Is that how much it was? 500?
Yeah, that was a $500 bail. We just got the money released within the last 2 weeks or so. It took them that long to process that my case had been dismissed and that it was okay to release it.
That was May 12th. When did they drop the charges?
June 27th.
What do you think took so long for them to figure out that what they were doing was stupid?
Well, the video wasn't released until the week before my third court date, the first being the arraignment the following morning. That went through. Then I was assigned a public defender. I don't make tons of money, so I qualified for free counsel. And the public defenders are so loaded with cases that I called her, you know, repeatedly, and she couldn't even look at my case until my second court date, which was pretrial. And that was almost 3 weeks later. I was arrested. You know, my $500 is in the system. And then 3 weeks later, I have my next court date. I have arraignment, then pretrial. And at that point, our round of cases come like onto her radar. And she finally gets to look at the case. And we set up a meeting for the following week, which was the first time we could actually sit down face to face and have a real conversation. And, you know, in the meantime, I had found another lawyer for a civil case looking far ahead, which we haven't even filed yet. But there was just so much time that passed in which I didn't quite know what to do. And 1 month after this whole incident happened, I went into my public defender's office with my iPod and I showed her this video. And this was the first chance that we'd had to sit down. And she says, "Can I get several copies of this? I need to show this to people. This is going to be a very interesting video."
Right.
And I brought in the copies the next day and the video quickly sort of made its rounds of the public defender's office. And I said, "Can I release it?" I've been eager to release it the entire time, but her initial words of advice were, "Don't release it. I haven't seen it. I don't have time right now, and I don't want it to hurt your case." So by the time she saw it, she knew it wasn't going to hurt my case. She gave me the go-ahead to release the video, and it was 5 weeks later that I finally released the video, 5 weeks after the initial incident had happened. And so at that point, it took off. My motions hearing was the following week, and she had submitted the motion very early, and the judge had plenty of time to read it. But it wasn't even the judge who dismissed the case. It had gone so big, and the city was, I think, so embarrassed to be prosecuting me for that, that the district attorney withdrew the case so he canceled.
Right. And just so our listeners know, that noise in the background, Emily told me earlier that an air show is going on. So if you hear something that sounds like a military jet streaking through the...
I just have to say that the activist in me, I am a community activist, is doing a bit of campaigning against at the air show this weekend, because it's a clear sort of militarism buildup. We're working against the drones that are operating upstate New York and flying over Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq. So we've got a big anti-drone campaign. So we're going to go and flyer and try to educate people at the air show.
Well, you know what? That's a good thing. I mean, I'm sure most of the listeners have seen the Terminator movie series, and that's what it was all about. So it seems like Terminator's right around the corner for the United States of America. Yes. Emily, do you happen to know what happened to that fellow who was stopped in front of your house that Thursday night?
I have no idea who that was, and I don't know what happened to him. And I suspect he knows that this case has, or, you know, that the video blew up like it did. But part of the police storyline is that he is a gang member and that the car was full of gang members, although I really don't remember seeing anyone else in the car. All the witnesses believe that there was only one person in the car, but the police report said that it was three gang members. So it doesn't surprise me that he hasn't come out in the public eye. One, because the public eye can be very harsh and mean. And two, you know, he's already been slandered and pegged as a gang member, and it's not an easy thing to come out and defend yourself when you really haven't necessarily done anything wrong. So I'm not surprised to not know what happened to him.
Right. I was thinking perhaps he contacted you or contacted people you know just to maybe thank you or whatever it might be.
No, I have received a number of letters from jail, and people have said, "Thank you for doing what you did. I support you. And I wish someone had been around to tape my arrest, because I dealt with some trumped up charges and here I am in jail." I've been getting a lot of support from people. And, you know, some of the letters have told the story of systemic harassment and racial profiling in their neighborhoods, and they have described the way that the police have humiliated and targeted people of color in certain neighborhoods, and they've pulled down their pants to search them in public repeatedly. One prisoner telling me that this is the story of 500 prisoners.
So they dropped the charges, and anything happened after that?
Before the charges were dropped, about 2 days after the video went viral, suddenly the eyes of the world are on me. This has blown up within 48 hours. And I went to the library near my house. I walked there feeling really on edge because my phone is exploding and everything is exploding. And I was away for less than an hour. I came home and went inside the house. My back door had been busted in, and I froze, terrified, and called the police. That's what's ingrained in my mind, to call the police. So I had friends come too, but the police showed up with another 7 officers, and they investigated the burglary, which destroyed our back door. It's still plywood boarded up. And the only thing that was taken from the whole house was the iPod that I had used to record the incident. And this is unusual considering that my roommates had expensive laptop computers, other iPods, things like that lying around the house. And there was clearly an attempt to just look around my room. So I felt like that was a targeted and scary incident that I see as some form of intimidation. But no way to prove that. I just went on with my day. And that evening, there was sort of a call out for a support meeting. So people were meeting at a community space near my house to talk about what to do with this incident that was just exploding. And right as we're starting the meeting, 4 uniformed police officers in 4 patrol cars pull up and start ticketing the cars that are legally parked outside of the community space, but for being more than 12 inches from the curb. And they had some pink rulers that they were using to put down between the curb and the car. Some of the cars were barely a half inch further than the ruler. So it felt like a really absurd use of their time and resources. And it felt like it was another case of clear intimidation. So some of our indie media journalists were at the meeting with cameras, and they went outside and caught this scene on tape, which was a ridiculous scene, filming police officers using rulers to give tickets to cars on a quiet street with no other reason.
What a joke.
So that sort of thing has not happened again, although there are feelings that the police have been following my mom. They've been cruising around my neighborhood a little bit more than they usually do. I don't live with my mom, but she thinks that they were following her at a certain point. They've put us in a position where we're definitely on the lookout for further harassment and intimidation.
And you said you were in the market for a civil attorney. Did you have any luck?
Yes, I found a lawyer, Donald Thompson, whose firm is handling the civil case, although it hasn't been filed yet. They're going to do it in the next week or two, having just been on vacation. I believe they are going to file cases in federal and state court, so I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. I'd like to see the case at least force the city to address some additional issues. I'm not sure we have the power to institute retraining of the police force or anything like that, but I hope that just by holding some extra attention, bringing a lawsuit against the city and the police force, that we will further the conversation and have more time and more resources come out to talk about how we can make things better.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what the charges are going to be?
False arrest, I believe. And I'm not sure, you know, what else. I mean, a violation of my First Amendment rights. I think my attorney said 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment, too.
From the little bit I know about it, it seems like they really messed with the wrong person.
People have speculated that I am a nut who was sort of waiting for this to happen because I've come out pretty strongly in my own defense, but I certainly wasn't waiting for them to pull someone over right in front of my house and spring into action. I've never taped the police before in my life. This was a pretty unusual series of occurrences that led to this. For me, you know, it was unusual, but as I learn about it, I realize that this kind of thing happens pretty regularly. So we're going to try to change that.
That's great. Emily, do you have a website that the listeners can check in with to get updates?
Well, Rochester Indie Media, if you know how to spell that, I-N-D-Y, media, mm-hmm. rochester.indiemedia.org will post updates. A bunch of my friends are involved in it, and they were the first people to release the video. And they've been posting pretty much full coverage of press conference and things like that. So I think that's the best spot to check for updates.
Okay, rochester.indiemedia.org, and of course, indie refers to independent.
Yes.
Okay, and another website that listeners might be interested in was the website that made your video go viral, and that is PixIQ.com. That's PIXIQ.com. And on there, you can see many videos. And also, there's an article that was just put up that Emily made me aware of, where a police officer who writes columns for the Police Officer magazine, whatever it might be called, the trade magazine, he came out criticizing cops who arrest citizens for videotaping. You know, this has a possibility to go a lot higher than Rochester or even the federal court in the area. It could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
That would be interesting. I'd like to see that happen.
Me too. Emily Good, activist from Rochester, New York. Thanks for taking the time to explain all this to our listeners.
Okay, thanks for your interest and support. I appreciate it.